Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi. A podcast hosted by three men who may or may not be looping through time.
Dun, dun, dun.
Just like only once.
Yes.
Or zero, however.
Yes,
zero, zeroth loop.
Exactly. All right, today we are reading Replay by Ken Grimwood, read by William Dufresne. This was my choice, so I'll start out by reading the back of the book. Jeff Winston, 43, didn't know he was a replayer until he died and woke up 25 years younger in his college dorm room. He lived another life and died again and lived again and died again in a continuous 25-year cycle, each time starting from scratch at the age of 18 to reclaim lost loves, remedy past mistakes, or make a fortune in the stock market. A novel of gripping adventure, romance, and fascinating speculation on the nature of time, Replay asks the question, what if you could live your life over again?
The best part about that is there's absolutely no spoilers at all about the plot of the book.
I'm not sure that this book is that spoilable, to be perfectly honest. But anyway, what did people think? Barry?
I thought it was all right.
Hmm.
I mean, to be fair, you know, no one really knows if their, you know, first loop is really going to be the first loop or not.
I couldn't agree more. Kevin?
I liked it. There are definitely some issues with it, but overall I enjoyed it.
Yes. This was another, in our internal slang, we call this a space vampire novel, meaning that I picked it up and kept reading it over and over again. Now, in this case, it's actually fairly explicable. It's kind of like a song that gets stuck in your head. Because,
it's like The Dark Side of the Moon, Steve.
Yeah, exactly. The whole thing is one big loop, or more like Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Oh, maybe you're right.
I don't know. Is Isn't this where we came in?
Is there an inner loop and an outer loop?
It's nested loops.
It's all nested loops all the way down. But
that makes
yeah.
much more sense.
No, it's so this is kind of midlife crisis, the novel, you know, sort of like somebody in their 40s looking back and thinking, well,
oh,
what
God,
if I could go
really screwed the pooch
and then sort of like reminiscing and thinking about, well, you know, what if I could have sex with all of those people again?
And even earlier.
And yes, that was one thing that I was surprised actually listening to it rather than reading it on dead trees was just how much erotic content that there was. And
there was a fair amount.
Exactly.
And it was always at the most inopportune moment when I was in the car with the actual window down.
That's your special power.
Yes.
Right.
You actually are a superhero, but that's just not very useful.
I am the spleen.
You are the self-embarrassment.
Yes. Especially when he yells out the word penis.
God.
Yes. Well, the only way to cover it is to scream it yourself. But anyway.
Try that next time.
So anyway, yes, it did win the World Fantasy Award in 1988, I believe. And I was, and I actually think that the quality of the writing is very strong. It's one of the things that I was surprised about is just, there's not really a major plot. I mean, we've just described the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, content-wise, I thought it might have been a little on the weaker side than some mm-hmm. of our other books. But, you know, like you said, the writing was really good.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe it's just, you know, the plot itself has become kind of dated here now after, I don't know how many, what, 20, almost 30 years.
Well, it depends on whether you count the replays.
Right. I mean,
well, that just makes it worse because they had time to get it right the second, third, fourth, and fifth time.
Exactly.
I mean, it's now a trope of some kind. I mean, it's basically Groundhog Day, but his whole, you know, 25-year span instead of one day or what was that called again? All You Need Is Kill or whatever the movie was called.
Live, Die, Repeat or Edge of Tomorrow or whatever they decided to call it the next week.
Yes. Right.
But that had the bonus of watching, you know, Tom Cruise die repeatedly, which was kind of its own bonus.
It's a horrible, horrible thing, Barry.
No, it really wasn't. I mean, I know what I was cheering for during that movie.
Well, yeah, actually, I liked that movie quite a bit, and I was surprised it wasn't quite as popular as I thought it should have been. But I am a sucker for time loops, so.
Right. You know. And yeah, I really do enjoy a time loop. And I don't know, when I was reading it the first time, I had also sort of had the thought of, well, what if I could loop back in time? Because I pretty sure I was reading it sort of post September 11th, where it was just like, okay, you know, what if we could go back and change the course of history rather than being sort of stuck here where we are now? And he was obviously doing some similar things with, say, the Kennedy assassination and that sort of thing.
Right.
So anyway, overall, I liked it, but it may not be for everyone. It's probably really good if you're just getting to your 40s.
Or your younger self at about 20.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I think it's time for us to engage our first loop and go back over and start this whole thing again, or maybe just do a discussion section next time.
Yeah, let's try a discussion section next time.
I don't want to do this again.
Don't have a choice.
We have no choice, for we are sci-fi.
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 And welcome back. So, yes. So, yeah, one of the things that I was a bit surprised about was there's a lot of erotic content, which is fine. But since it is from 1988, it's a slightly dated novel in its treatment of women. So, for example, he's got Sharla, basically the floozy he picks up somewhere.
And I think it's Vegas.
Yes. She is totally described in objectified terms.
Yeah, I mean, she's essentially a sex kitten.
Right. And to the point where I think I wrote that down as her entire character description.
Well, that seems what his entire point was.
Exactly.
She's not really developed beyond that. That's basically it.
Right. To the point where, like, when they break up after a multi-year relationship, he gives her a lot of money and she says, oh, okay, yeah, sure, bye. We can have sex one more time.
You earned it.
Yeah. And I suppose that there are people that are actually like that, but
given the socio-political things going on right now,
yeah,
it was a little uncomfortable for me.
Sure.
It kind of immediately stuck out as, oh, really?
You know, one thing that was definitely interesting was if you look up what Ken Grimwood's life is like, he's definitely writing what he knows. He actually was a... You know, he had a broadcast journalism background, and basically, as far as I can tell, Jeff is Ken Grimwood to a certain degree. But to be fair, it's not all from his perspective, and we did have a strong female character in Pamela, the other looper that he encounters, and she actually correctly takes him to a task a couple of times, most particularly, and I thought the most interesting moment was, you know, so they're both suffering from the skew, which is they both sort of come back into their own lives later and later on in life. And so, and he seems to be skewing a little bit less than she is. So he lives slightly longer. And for a while, he actually hooks up with the pre-looping version of herself. So the version of herself that doesn't know anything about him.
Well, right. It's because this is sort of like Quantum Leap or something where
exactly
your repeating self with your memories takes over your body at a certain year.
Right.
And so it starts out, you know, they die in 1988. They wake up in 1963 in their bodies like they relived it. And then, like you said, next time it's like, you know, just a couple of days afterwards, and eventually it's like 1965, 1969 and stuff.
Right.
And well, so it's where they regain their memories at which point, right, which is later and later because of what they call the skew.
Right. So then, you know, he thinks that, she, you know, her last time, and she's not going to come back based on their calculations. And then he's like, okay, I only have a couple years. And he kind of tracks her down just to kind of stalk her for a while. And kind of like, I mean, it's basically like they're both very... I want to say codependent, but it's sort of like that's like his entire life is thinking about this great relationship he had with her.
Right.
Well, and he's also, it's also a very selfish view of things, right? Because at one point, you know, he kind of hooks up with her before she regains a lot of her memories.
Right.
And she gets super mad because, you know, he basically is like hooking up with her, essentially a different person.
Right.
But, you know, and at the first time that I read it, I thought, oh, you know, she's being a little bit unreasonable, but this time I sort of focused more on her actual objections.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, yeah, she's got some amazingly good points, especially, you know, well, you hooked up with the previous version of me under false pretenses.
Yeah.
You didn't say who you actually were. You you know, but you knew everything about this previous version of me.
Right. It was
you manipulated her.
A power dynamic, right? I know everything about like what you like and what you enjoy and, you know, what'll, you know, really get you to like me ahead of time. You know, so it was kind of creepy stalker.
But I really appreciated that he, you know, this wasn't entirely, and Jeff is so awesome. You know, he actually saw the problem in it and had Pamela actually call it out correctly.
Right. Yeah. And you could tell that he kind of hesitated himself.
Yeah.
That he's like, I don't know if I should be doing this. This is really not a good idea. But he was sort of like, I'm so lonely and I'll just give in basically. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, and she's the one who ends up initiating it, her, you know, pre-self or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but anyway, yeah, it does definitely show things are complicated, and you know, I think the wish fulfillment of like kind of trying things over different ways,
right?
You know, seems to be a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely starts out as a bunch of wish fulfillment fantasies, and I think that the interesting thing was him saying at the end, well, we never really improved things. We changed things and, you know, we kind of got things different, but we never really made huge differences in the world. Though I'm not entirely sure that that's true. I mean, they both had, you know, like at one point she was the equivalent of Steven Spielberg. Well, hell, she like produced.
Starcy.
Yes. She was like a major motion picture creator and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, I think the concept of having a replay loop can very easily be a very selfish thing, right?
Absolutely.
You could essentially bend everything to your advantage.
Right. It's another way of going through on God mode.
Right.
Because, you know, and it's part of the fun of Live, Die, Repeat is just like watching him, you know, screw up, basically, you know, die and then learn, okay, no, I step over here next and be able to go through an entire conversation with, yes, you're so-and-so, you did this, you know, being able to be 500 steps ahead of everybody else is part of the fun of this kind of plot. And it's sort of interesting because he never actually did the exact same thing twice. You know, in other versions of this, the loops are a bit tighter and there's a specific problem to solve.
Well, also, without the skew, maybe that could have happened, but, you know, you're limited to, you know, 5 to 10 loops with how the skew keeps getting, you know, shorter and shorter.
Exactly.
Yeah. With the tighter loops, you basically end up with like a Groundhog Day,
mm-hmm.
you know, mechanism.
Right. When it's like 25 years, it's hard to remember exactly what happened every day.
Right.
Which sort of leads us to our next question, which is, all right, so if we were in this situation, you know, first, how would we handle the first loop? How would we get rich or fail to get rich?
This is awesome!
No.
Yes.
I think we were kind of
laughing. We talked about it a little bit before.
We were laughing because he really depends on the fact that he's a reporter and or a, quote, regular person who knows anything about sports or anything. And, like, I'm only vaguely aware that sports exist. So it's sort of like I couldn't. I, you know, my entire life, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I could name a couple popular teams, but I couldn't say when they won or, you know, for sure at all. And whereas he's like, well, I know the Kentucky Derby, the outcome was this, and this has a long odds. So, you know, he makes these huge, crazy bets. And
right. Exactly. And I'm not at all sure what I could bet on. Like maybe, you know, Academy Awards results.
Right. You know, presidential elections, you know, even that I'm, you know, painfully not accurate, you know, pre-certain dates. And like, you know, I could probably figure it out, but, you know, but it's like, okay, let's sit down and we could, you know, there's a few of these that we could probably say, okay, this seemed unlikely or something. And
so tech stocks, I could probably do okay.
It's like, okay, we could buy Microsoft and Apple stock in the 1980s and you know, whatever. It just depends. The thing about the bets is it's a very short-term, you know, gain. Whereas with stocks, usually it takes several years to see the outcome.
Right. Well, I mean, I thought about the same thing and, you know, I would have done probably the, you know, the tech stocks as well, but with way more identity theft just to get my initial nut bigger, right?
Right.
You know, the starting sum, right? You'd have about, you know, 15, 20 years to basically steal as much money as you possibly could without actually having to do much work.
Yes. We've all taken psychopathy tests and guess who won?
Me.
But mine was sort of, well, you know, I could just sort of start emailing the guy who started Netscape and the guys who started Yahoo. And I could just sort of like, you know, go in just like, hey, yeah, oh yeah, you wanted a sandwich? Here's a sandwich. Can I be one of your first employees? And just, you know, I you don't need to pay me, just like a dollar and huge quantities of stock options. That would be great. Thank you.
Yes. I would like the word futurist appear on my, on yeah, my business card.
Exactly. Yeah, there'd be that. And I think that the biggest thing would be like Bitcoin. I would just get involved in Bitcoin because there would be a time when I could literally print my own money.
Well, there's also a large number of crimes that they've, you know, made somewhat more obsolete as of late in the last 10 years.
I was specialized where his in. Mind goes.
Easy money, my friend.
It's a loop, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't count.
They're not real people. let's see. That was actually one thing that they brought up in the book that I thought was interesting was he was making all these bets. And he pointed out at one point that he was basically committing a vast fraud, but not one that was remotely detectable.
Right. I mean, it's all part of the underground economy of, you know, shady bets and, mm-hmm. and bookies and things like that.
And after a while, then they sort of figured out that he wasn't allowed to bet anymore, and they never figured out how he did it.
Yeah, right. I mean, but they do like, communicate hey. With one another, and they basically, you know, blacklisted him.
Right.
Well, so it was interesting because the first loop was basically like, you know, the money loop.
Right.
And then I'm trying to remember the exact ordering. It was like the money loop, and then was the one after that where he does marry his like college sweetheart, and
right,
and you know, he becomes. You know, he's like, you know, he goes right. out of his way not to be too successful.
So, yeah, the second one was respectability, basically. Yeah.
And the third one was
hedonism.
Yeah, he just says, screw it, goes off and was does his drug the, and sex run.
I forget exactly.
There's also the one where he prevents the assassination of Kennedy, but then the other guy kills him anyway.
Right. That was the first one, yeah.
Yeah, that was one where that was a point where I was just like, thought that the narrator was working his way carefully through a situation, but didn't quite succeed, in my opinion, because so first of all, you know, unless you believe in a conspiracy, then the murder of Kennedy in that place at that time was completely contingent. I mean, you know, Oswald did not have a very coherent plan of exactly how he was going to do this. He got lucky or unlucky or whatever. But leaving that aside, he, you know, that was the only place where the idea of forces of history sort of keeping things on the same level seemed to have an effect. Because later on, say, for example, when he's advising inadvertently or, you know, without wishing to the U.S. government, then he is able to take the history way off track.
Right. I mean, it changes pretty drastically to the point where
true.
He has that, like, nothing is falling into place anymore.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that, where that does, you know, he basically converts everything to a police state by the time that he's done in the late 80s.
Right.
And before, maybe it was like a single event. You can't change that much.
Yeah, like Jimmy Carter was never president and Lyndon Johnson was elected early and...
Right, exactly. I mean, I would love actually to see a novel where the assassination of Kennedy was actually prevented and they actually sort of stepped through history. Stephen King tried to do that with his sort of JFK novel, but there was so much supernatural stuff going on at the end that I didn't really get to, you know, I'd like to see at least a projection of, hey, what do we really think would have happened if Kennedy hadn't been assassinated? That's not what Ken Grimwood wanted to write about. He wanted to write about somebody going through our history, but he couldn't imagine not trying to stop Kennedy's assassination
right.
without being a total monster.
Well, I get the feeling that, you know, the Kennedy assassination was sort of like a hallmark moment in his life, right? Much
right.
like, you know, 9/11 is like a hallmark moment in our lives.
Right.
Right.
Not a hallmark. That's the wrong word, but a
there aren't any cards.
Right. Happy 9/11 day.
God. Thinking of you.
I do have a former coworker who has a bronzed bagel on the wall that saved his life.
On 9/11, or are you just...
Yes.
Okay.
He was walking to work just before the plane hit the tower. He had stopped to get a bagel, and he walked outside. The plane hit the building.
Wow.
He immediately put the bagel in his bag and then had it bronzed.
I mean, this is the other problem. You know, it would be... harder, I mean, at least on my first go around, I would want to stop September 11th from happening. But despite like having read the 9/11 Commission report and so forth, I couldn't tell you the names of most of the hijackers. I happened to stumble across an article saying where some of them had stayed the night before, so might be able to just, you know.
Yeah, it's just outside of Boston.
Right. It's a Days Inn.
I have a friend who lives not too far from that Days Inn.
So, you know, could do something interesting there, I'm sure, if we were traveling back and forth through time like that.
I do believe one of our future books is about this very subject.
Oh, okay.
You know, even in this book, he talks about the whole thing, well, how do you try to alert the authorities when the first response was going to be, well, obviously you're involved if you know this stuff.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really go over to say, I'm from the future and I know this is going to happen.
And preventing cataclysmic events is going to have ripples, you know, right, down the timeline, right, that you can't predict.
Exactly. And so, yeah, he wouldn't. So I understand why the author did it this specific way. Basically, he stops Oswald, but somebody else essentially just steps in and takes Oswald's place. But he basically says, well, either there was a conspiracy or there's mysterious forces of history.
Right. He just kind of says, I think it was that.
But you know, it might be that there's a conspiracy. So, yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, current TV sci-fi shows that kind of go into this. And a lot of times it's just, you know, time wants to, you know, repair itself. And so it'll just get things done. And
right,
that type of trope.
Right. And, you know, the reverse trope is the Hitler death exemption, you know, where you can't just go and shoot Hitler as a child. First of all, bad idea, but
right. Like,
well, once he hits 18,
just to shoot children,
fine, right?
Just shooting children is bad.
Yes.
I'm taking that moral stand mostly.
Yes, I think we could all agree on that. But right, there's been plenty of science fiction about, you know, there was an episode of Outer Limits where, yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly what happened, but basically they're like, okay, he somehow kidnapped Hitler as a baby or something like that, and then the nanny freaked out and like just grabbed another baby that was in the ward or something and said, right, here's, you know, so it turns out that
here's
Hitler,
little Adolf.
Yeah, Hitler was actually just some other baby. It wasn't, you know, their kid. And so
right,
it's like the, what is it? The predestination paradox kind
so
of thing.
So you're exactly saying it was all nurture and not nature.
Or that this kid was destined to be evil, you know, like this other kid was destined to be the evil one all along.
Oh, I see.
His interference was part of the original timeline.
Oh, I see, yes.
Yes.
There's also that trope as well, which is your actual you know, intrusion into the timeline is actually what causes the...
Right.
Right. So I think, like we were discussing, we need to have our temporal agency, which goes back, you know, and helps frustrated artists out.
Yeah, exactly.
To, you know,
make them more successful.
Adolf Hitler, what, the artist? I don't like his stuff, but, you know, he didn't kill millions of people. Yeah.
According to the timeline, we really ought to help this guy out.
Yeah, exactly.
That, and Manson, you know, here, your singing career is taken off great, like, you know.
Even the Beach Boys want to use your songs unedited.
Yeah, you know, but then, you know, so yes, when we're talking about this, it's just like, so, but what if people start getting this on an unconscious level? They start to understand that, you know, the way to become a very successful artist is to become an absolutely horrible person. And then, you know, people will swoop in from outside the timeline and rescue you. All you have to do is plan a mass murder and somehow.
I think it's difficult to get those actually performed.
This is why we hand out like those little participation medals to all the kids who basically participate. And so that way they always win something.
Yes. Yes.
That way they, you know, don't come out to be mass murderers from now on.
That's what that's all about.
That's why Hitler.
Not that Johnny always wins and everyone has to feel good. It's that they're trying to prevent the future, you know, mass murders of the world. Okay, I feel better about that now.
So, all right, moving on.
All the mass shootings now are going to stop because we are handing out participation medals.
And it seems very apropos right now to talk about the other Looper that they encounter, Stuart, and who performs the appeasement. Basically, he's this guy who he's also going through this, but has a different interpretation. Basically, oh, yeah, well,
I'm not saying it's aliens.
I'm not saying
it's aliens.
But it's aliens. I've read a few places where they've pointed out, well, they are actually being watched by mysterious beings in another universe that are, you know, hanging on every action and kind of would like a little bit, you know, more violence sometimes, in TV viewers or us reading the book.
It's like the universe is one big Truman Show and, you know, other outside universe things are watching us, you know, and it's like, yay, this is entertaining. And that's why it's looping, because they keep watching this violent period of history over and over again.
The Elder Gods Nielsen Network ratings are down. We got to inject more violence.
I mean, you know, he could have just said, I'm here because otherwise there isn't any tension whatsoever in the book.
Right.
You know, if he believed that the aliens were reading him as a novel, then it simply would have become the most meta thing ever. Probably a little over the top.
A little too PKD there.
I didn't actually find that particular scene very tense. I mean, I kind of figured out that he was in a mental institution pretty early on, right? Even though they kind of played a little dumb, you know, leading up to it.
Mm-hmm. Though you can sort of see being actually in the situation and just, you know, not catching it until.
Yeah.
I kind of had a brief moment where I was thinking that Stuart was going to be just this guy that's like, well, you know, on this replay, I'm just going to take it easy and they're just going to feed me pudding and scrambled eggs, you know, for the rest of my life if I just act a little crazy. And it's kind of what he was doing a little bit. I mean,
He knew he was going to get caught. He never really tried very hard. I mean, as a replayer, he could avoid being caught if he wanted to.
Right.
But yeah. Okay.
And that's also the point where they start catching on to the skew in the book. And, you know, my mind immediately went to the sort of like this, you know, dark place where they start remembering all of their prior lives and memories, like just moments before they're about to die, and they would never actually get past that hump. And so you know, always like, you know, have like that last second of sheer terror and confusion right before they die, which would be normal anyway, but just be 10 times worse.
Well, that kind of happened right at the end, because they were just looping around really, really quickly.
Right. But they eventually push through that you know, somehow, like the rubber band breaks or something.
Well, right. I don't think that they were ever actually dying then. I think that they interpreted it as dying, but were just being sucked back by whatever the hell. I mean, since it's never explained what's causing this, which I both admire and find a little frustrating, you know.
Right.
The unexplained.
It's like the last episode of Lost. Nothing's going to be satisfying.
Right. But on the other hand, like anything that they came up with would have been irritating.
It was aliens.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a computer program.
Right.
I'm dreaming.
Right.
I'm dreaming. My dream is my dream.
Mm-hmm. I do have that mental image of that guy that says it's not alien. I'm not saying it's aliens, but
it's aliens. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and then the thing, kind of like once he, you know, meets up with Pamela, it kind of, there's a whole period where it kind of feels very Jonathan Livingston Seagull or whatever that was called.
Right, Richard Bach.
Yeah. And it just, you know, it's like, let's soar together. And I was like, part of me liked it. Part of me is like inwardly groaning going, oh God, this is going to be really painful.
It's 1988. It's not unlikely that that is a direct sort of influence of Richard Bach, even though he may not have really thought about it that way.
Well, that and the dolphins and.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if the word is dated, but it's just a little weird to me.
Yeah, it sort of jumps out now. So then we have this entire book written from like very tight perspectives, and then we have an epilogue, which is just, and then the same thing happens to somebody else. And I just don't get that epilogue. I don't understand.
I think the point maybe was to kind of like do a very obvious injection into the reader that, hey, maybe this could happen to you or something, or maybe to somebody else, not just them.
I actually thought it was more along the lines of, you know, maybe I could tee it up for a trilogy or something.
It sounds like a good thing for a TV series. Every episode is someone's repeating their life.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, or maybe somebody jumping into somebody else's lives to correct something, and then only maybe someday he can make the leap home.
Yes. And that would be an interesting, we could call him Twiggy or something.
Exactly.
That's the computer's name.
Well, when we loop back in time, then we can be the ones who come up with this idea.
You have to say in a very emphatic, you know, and one day he'll make the leap home.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back in time and kill that guy first, and that way we'll have the idea.
Good idea. Short-term profit gain. The guy's probably a billionaire.
Okay, we know who Stuart is.
I did say that I would probably commit more crimes in my loops.
Oh, that was the joke. Yes. Yeah. I didn't quite get the epilogue.
Well, also, I think the most amusing thing about the epilogue was the fact that it goes from 1988 to 2017. So
yes.
This year. So I'm assuming that we're all going to have heart attacks and go back in time to 1988.
The clock is ticking. There's only about 2 weeks left.
That's right before I was in high school. So
given my overall lifestyle, I'm looking forward to this podcast being very ironic someday.
Yes. Well, I'll throw myself under the bus, and apparently the author did have a heart attack.
Yes, yes. I will admit that I had pointed that out off mic conversations. And so we can only assume that this was actually all true.
Yes.
Yes. It was just an autobiography. Well,
that would be the most optimistic view, because at the very end, they end up not having a heart attack, right? So this is all one giant crazy wish fulfillment where he's like, I want to relive my life 5 or 10 times and then not have any negative consequences. And then I could, after I do all that stuff, like I figure out what I want to do.
Right. Exactly.
And he just goes back to his regular life and yay.
Yeah. I'm fairly convinced that I'd just go full hedonism for the full 10 replays or.
That would be tempting. Although I think one of my favorite parts was when he kind of turns into the crazy hippie and just like lives on the farm by himself. Like I'm like, I could see.
Yeah. All right.
You have a strange concept of hedonism.
Well, okay. It's back to the earth hedonism.
Where I just eat dirt.
Well, he had a lot of beef jerky.
Beef jerky, indeed. Which brings us to favorite scenes. It doesn't actually bring us to favorite scenes, in case you're wondering, but I needed to get there somehow. Did anybody else have any particular favorite scenes? Yes. Barry, I see you have one.
Yeah, the first loop. Right? Where he goes basically full rich man.
Right.
Bet on everything.
As you say, you would have done the same thing, but with more identity theft.
Right.
So you were saying that the guy was just too honest.
Well, he wasn't dishonest enough.
I'm always confused by his friend who was freaking out. He's like, you know stuff. And he basically had to quit because he was having too much stress about stuff happening. And that's the kind of thing where as a science fiction reader, I'm like, what's your problem? Just like, you know, deal. I'm like, just accept that he knows stuff from the future.
My friend knows things from the future. That does not mean I'm going to run away from him. That means, buddy, old mine.
I know. Just set me up with some stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, by the second loop, you know, Frank has like enough seed money for you to get started, right? So you basically rob Frank first. You know.
Okay. Where's the door to this place? Okay, so basically it's only the fact that we're not in a loop right now that is keeping you from robbing both Kevin and I blind.
You just haven't noticed yet.
Yes,
remember,
I'm sure.
The best crimes are the ones where even the victim hasn't even noticed.
I think we're just not good sources of cash is the problem.
Yeah. This podcast is going to be even more ironic when Barry somehow kills me with a heart attack.
Do you feel
with
it
the power
yet?
Of his mom.
Do you feel it yet?
Yes, I do. I really liked, ironically, the final scene where they kept on dying over and over again.
You're like, I just laughed. I couldn't stop myself.
it was actually this sort of dramatic scene, which I hadn't quite grasped what was happening when I had the first few thousand times I read the book. It was sort of like actually listening to it made me, you know, because I was just like, oh yeah, they're dying. Sort of.
You're like flip page. And weird.
Right. Exactly.
In audio, they force you to go through.
Exactly.
You linear time.
Generally my philosophy. And I also liked where Jeff and Pamela are being. So at one point they decide to go public and they say, okay, yes, you know, this is what the future is going to be. And they're okay. Science, help us with the skew. And I guess it's sort of like the equivalent of make us immortal.
Right. Well, the thing that bothered me about that actually was I'm like, okay, yes, your data points aren't that accurate, but it's like high school math to like take your right. four equations and figure out what the solution is. You know, it might not be accurate, but you can do that with the textbook from high school. It's not like, you know, advanced right. math.
So suddenly, you know, a nice man from the government takes them to an island, I guess.
And, quote, nice man.
Yeah, exactly. And it turns out, well, he's not really quite who he says he is. And he's basically there to pump them for information about the future. Even though he doesn't actually believe their story, he believes that they are somehow getting information about the future, but he doesn't believe that they're replayers. And so when...
Right. That was kind of funny because it's like, oh, that's ridiculous that you're reliving your life, but you're psychic, right? I mean, for some reason, psychic, you know, phenomenon is something that is a general accepted possible thing.
Right. And whereas weirdly enough, I would accept, oh, I'm looping through time as at least self-consistent.
Incongruous belief sets.
Mm-hmm. He keeps on interrogating them, and they're just like, what's going to happen now? I don't know. You know, you killed all of these people that, you know, you kill pretty much everybody I mention in these things.
Right. You prevented the fall of Saigon. You've, you know, repaired the Middle East before it broke up. And
and now it's broken even worse. And, you know, basically United States is a police state now. And no, this bears no relation to anything that I've ever seen before.
Right.
And it's just like, well, we're going to put you on sodium pentothal and find out.
Yeah. And I'm like, still telling the truth.
Not going to hell.
Right.
It's like, I could tell you some movies that might have come out if you hadn't shut that down.
I mean, that would, once again, that would be like the big frustration of anybody who tried to get knowledge of the future from me. It would be like, and then there's another television show.
They're like, do you know anything about the actual like world news? You're like, oh, well, I've heard of it. Like, you know,
I try to avoid it as much as humanly possible. But, I had a podcast.
You know, and at this year, they're going to come out with third edition Dungeons and Dragons. Like, you know.
They're like, no, but we need to know who the 45th president is.
You're like, ooh, I'm going to have the best D&D collection ever. I'm going to buy everything when it comes out in 1977.
I'm going to buy like 10 copies each and put them in, you know, Mylar bags and put them in a safe deposit box.
Gary, could you sign all of these?
Yeah. You know, I was reading about, you know, Neil Gaiman wrote this biography of Duran Duran, like really early in his career. And apparently, like, now it's this prized item.
Yeah, although it's worth like thousands and thousands of dollars.
Exactly. At the time, it was just like this fluff biography. And so it's just like, okay, I got, you know, mental note, when I loop back,
I'm going to buy like a whole case of these and have him sign it. It's like, why do you want me to sign this book?
Like, no reason.
You'll find out, you know, can you sign it something about Sandman or whatever?
Exactly. Huh? And then he's just like, oh, no. No, I can't use Sandman. You know, I wrote that bizarre man's book. And then he just never becomes famous. And then we've destroyed Neil Gaiman.
Neil Gaiman's career.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So speaking of Neil Gaiman, was there any tea? Not that I really noticed.
I don't think there was.
No.
It might have increased my enjoyment of the book.
I thought you didn't like books with tea. Anyway.
It depends on the replay.
I suppose. Which character would you want to be, and or who would you be? There's only a few characters to be, and I'm kind of frightened to find out.
I mean, it's hard just not to say, well, I would be Jeff.
Yeah,
because, you know,
Jeff is...
It's just sort of the... It's more of the, yes, I wouldn't mind having to go through that, I think. Because especially at the end, nothing changes, so you just get to live an extra 80 years of trying stuff out.
Right.
Yeah, if I had to pick one of the bit players, I think I'd probably pick Russell. The CIA spook.
Right.
Yeah. You're like, hey, that would be fun to torture them.
Well, no, I mean, you'd basically have a large impact on history, at least for that one loop.
That's true.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think I'd stick with Jeff. Yes.
I would be the dolphin in Starsea. or I could be John Lilly and have... You know, horrible, bizarre things happen to me.
Yep, you could give LSD to dolphins. That's science, you know.
It makes them talk to you.
You just dump it in the blowhole?
I don't remember that part, but he did do a lot of work with
dolphins. Barry just
likes
saying the word blowhole.
Yes, I'm sure that's true.
It's a common element of every loop.
At least once I say that word.
Okay. I think that the skew has increased sufficiently that it's time for us to have repeated heart attacks and then go on with our lives. So we will return because we have no choice because we're caught in a time loop because we are sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi.